Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to welcome you all to for watching this session online and in person here at the University of Regina campus in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. My name is Michael Shires, and I am the Collection Development Librarian here at the University of Regina. Today's presentation is the fourth in the library's Beyond the Book lecture series for the university's academic year 2011-2012. This session is being streamed live on the internet, and it will be archived with a link on the Dr. John Archer Library's website. Today's lecture is being co-sponsored by the Saskatchewan Science Center in Regina. It's also currently housing an exciting exhibit about the Titanic through March 2012, so I encourage people who live in the area to check it out. The title of today's presentation is called Titanic, Science, the Arts, and the Microbes. The session will be about 1 hour, and there will be a Q&A session afterwards. I'm very pleased now to introduce our speaker, Dr. Roy Cullimore. Dr. Cullimore is involved with deep ocean microbiological research, which includes the only steel corrosion experiments allowed to be placed on the RMS Titanic wreck site. And he has visited the site at least 3 times, perhaps more. Dr. Cullimore is an entrepreneurial applied microbial ecologist who has 11 patents and has published best-selling books related to groundwater biofouling. Dr. Cullimore obtained a doctorate from the University of Nottingham in agricultural microbiology in 1962. He moved from the University of Surrey in the UK to the University of Regina in 1968. Dr. Cullimore has had a long and distinguished career in academia before retiring in 2001 to work for Droicon Bioconcepts, a company which he had founded years earlier. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Roy Cullimore.
Thank you very much. The title I've chosen is Shadow in the Darkness, The Fading of Titanic. A little different for the title I suggested. And the reason for doing that is essentially when the Titanic was at sea, it was dark. There were the stars. There was no moon. There was essentially a still air, which in the middle of the North Atlantic is extremely rare. So the iceberg that actually sank the Titanic was merely a shadow in the darkness. If you have got close, as people learn to do, get closer to the waves and look along, you can see the shadow in the stars. But at that time, the people in the crow's nest, number one, is they weren't officers, they weren't allowed to use the binoculars, and they saw the iceberg at the same time as the people on the bridge. And the iceberg was dead ahead, sir, straight at it. And the speed was 22 knots. Every other ship in the region was at 7 to 9 knots max because they're in the ice beam. But Captain Smith, who was about to retire, wanted to get to New York on Tuesday evening, and it meant keep the speed going. And the statisticians tell me that there was a 99% chance that he would have succeeded. Well, unfortunately, it was the 1%. And that glorious ship on her maiden voyage sank. What I'd like to do is go through some of the technologies that have been used on the Titanic, and all of the movies you're going to see now relate to primarily the 2003 expedition, which was sponsored by the National Atmospheric and Oceanographic Administration. This was the prime submarine, and regrettably, this is a Russian submarine called the Mir, and it has beautiful control. So you can move very slowly, very carefully, with minimum damage to the environment. What we've seen subsequent to this, particularly North America, is the use of robotic submersibles, which use a lot of energy, and they take out a lot of the environment as they come down. The Titanic was the biggest ship. Optimistically, she was about 33% bigger than anything previously built. And the Mauritania, Lusitania were all about 30,000. She was 40,000 tons, but they used traditional technologies. They used rivets, they didn't use welding. And when they started to build the Titanic was the second of three ships. The first ship was the Olympic, and the Olympic ran into so many problems and actually collided with Royal Naval ships, and it ripped the side of the ship open, but fortunately the watertight doors held and the ship didn't sink. For the Titanic, they were actually changing the regulations as they went along. At the front, there were two lines of rivets. As you come to the middle, three lines, four lines, five lines, because it was realized a ship of this size needed a lot more rivets. And the marine architects today still revel in the number of rivets and the effect that had, because the Titanic sailing out to sea, and the iceberg, when it hit 5 points along the starboard side. Unfortunately, in different compartments. Unfortunately, it meant that the ship would be sinking from the front down very quickly. So this is the ship before she sailed. Now, the effect of the iceberg hit was to sink the ship down, and that you see in all the movies, the Cameron movie, whatever. Because of my role as a microbiologist looking at iron bacteria, I was interviewed by telephone in 1995. Ah, Roy, would you be prepared to visit the Titanic? And are there iron bacteria on the Titanic? Well, yeah, of course there's going to be iron bacteria on the Titanic. And then about 3 weeks later, and it's now the summer of 1996. All right, we've put you on the expedition. We've also put you to dive to the ship. Do you suffer from claustrophobia? Well, that was another story, but I could resolve that without a problem. And then, would you put experiments down on the ship? All right, you're giving me 3 weeks to go now. You're telling me you'd like experiments. Okay, well, we'll try and do it. And then I get a phone call, make sure they're sterile. Okay, well, we'll make sure they're sterile. So I put down these experiments, and then we went back in 98. We went back, Laurie Johnston, who worked with me at that time, she went in 2001 for 2 months with Jim Cameron when he did the Titanic film. She was there. Actually, there's a story about Laurie. You know, Jim Cameron appears to have a short fuse. He doesn't have a short fuse, but he has a low tolerance for incompetent stupidity. And when you've got a ship and you're filming and it's costing you $1 million a day, the last thing you want is to not be able to communicate. People were not putting the cell phones back in their holders to recharge them. And so Jim got into this habit of throwing the cell phone over the side. Well, this would tend to suggest a short temper, you know, a big temper. Anyway, Laurie is on the ship with him for 2 months doing the scientific stuff. Jim really appreciated what she was doing. And on the only occasion when she walked across and a shadow went over the set, Jim did not go ballistic and yell and scream at her as she had done, he had with everybody else. She just passed by, and somebody said later, "Laurie, you walked across a shot," and they had to reshoot that shot. But Jim's very good. Then 86 when it was discovered. In 96, 98 actually, when we dove to the ship for the second time, I got a phone call. This is from the Maryland Science Center. "Oh, Roy, could you draw the Titanic as it was in 86 when Bard discovered it? Oh, could you draw it the way it is today? Oh, and could you do it when it's going to, what it's going to be like in 2012? Oh, and could you 2112? Well, you're asking me to be Nostradamus. However, I can draw. And so that is the drawing that I did in 98 of the Titanic. And there are, in fact, four of those things. And what it's telling you is the ship is degenerating. Now, let's go on to the high dice. These are the bacteria that are actually recycling the iron for nature. So you'll see that they're hanging down. This is the stern section of the ship, which was badly damaged during the descent. But you see all these big rust holes, and if you're wondering, this is about 6 feet, 2 meters, and this is near the engine room. Down at the bottom here, you'll see they're dangling. That's one of our experiments. You'll see that more clearly later on. Where I got a phone call, "Oh, Roy, you're going in 98, could you possibly put down some corrosion studies?" "Okay, so what do you want?" "Well, we want to be able to look and see how the steel is degenerating over time and how it's being corroded by the microbes." So what we did was we put down four platforms in 1998, and we've recovered three of those now. And we've got a sense of the rate at which the iron is going. Bottom line is that the nature is recycling the iron. When the Titanic was built, the iron for the steel came from pig iron, basically in northern England. So the iron was extracted from the pig iron, made into the Titanic, sent out to sea, and now today, in 2011, the microbes are taking it back. This is the propeller. This is the starboard propeller. It's an interesting ship in that this propeller and the one on the other side were driven by reciprocating engines, by steam. The middle propeller was a turbine driven. It was the state-of-the-art technology at that time. And so what you've got essentially is you've got brass alloys which didn't degrade at all. And so those propellers are sitting the way they were. This is some rusticles growing along here. But look at the electrical cables. This is in the stern where the electrical rooms are inside. And so the cables came outside. And what happened is that the microbes are not really attacking the rubber on the cable. But we've had this happen in the laboratory. They don't attack the rubber, but they actually will crawl along the copper and move to the other end of the copper and then come out. And then we'll see a growth coming there. This has happened in the lab. So that helped me to realize that the microbes actually make electricity, they use electricity, and the cabling on the ship became just another means by which they could move the power across. This shot shows you, again, it's the stern. Look at the tangled steel. And the question to me was, and this is the decking going, again the stern. So the wood is now nearly all rotted away. And if you're wondering, well, what sort of wood is that? Well, that was northern pine, oak, and mahogany were used in different places, and there was some teak. What we did was not on the Titanic. Now, we would have done it in 2010, but Hugo and Eagle stopped that from happening. And so we didn't get them down, but the submarine in the Gulf of Mexico did have the mahogany, did have the oak. The oak totally degraded in 6 years. The mahogany is actually going very quickly. This is one of the test platforms being observed, and this would have been in 2003. And you'll notice this arm sticking out is where we actually are going to move the experiment around. Again, we're now coming, this is the bow section, the officer's quarters, and you see again a festoon of rusticles, and I haven't actually said what a rusticle is. A rusticle is a living concrete. Oh, come on. I had about 5 years of battle with the concrete industry over this one, because they've got a fondness for the word cure. And I said, no, concrete does not cure. It grows. Just because it doesn't change in volume doesn't mean to say that the microbes aren't in there weaving their threads and making the concrete stronger. And so, don't you think it's time that we started to call a spade, and okay, what we've got with the rusticles is that we've got another form of concrete. Another form of concrete is coral, which the zoologists, they're still claiming are animals, but we had some concrete from the Florida Keys, and I'll tell you, we got all the fingerprints from microbes that you could believe. Here's, this is the bridge deck, bow side. This is the first of the lifeboat launches that was launched. Over here was one of our first experiments. And yep, you put them up nice and neatly and you think they're going to stay where they are. Well, there's a lot of life down there and a lot of curious fish. And they're going to nudge it and push it and shove it around. So it ends up with not too smoothly. We move things around, get them back, and get them into position. And you will see the deck is going here. We actually pulled this platform off in 2004 out of concern that the deck would give way. And I didn't want to see that experiment disappear into the bowels of the ship. So you'll see with these close-up shots that there's rusticles growing. This is another one. This was one that we put in a whale deck. It was actually on the floor of the ocean. The whale deck is just in front of the bow, so it's near the front of the ship. And we wanted to see how the microbes would attack the steel in that type of condition. Well, we got this one back. No, we did get this one back. This one is still down there. It's the last one. The others have all come back. And we're finding consistency in the rate at which the iron is coming out. And the other thing is, just by viewing this periodically, we're able to show that there is, in fact, a life cycle. The rusticles grow, then they drop off. And when you look at the ship itself, the rusticles grow, and then they drop off. You'll see some of the rusticles that have dropped off on the ocean floor. And when we do the chemical analysis, what do we have? Pig iron. The pig iron was taken from northern England, made into steel, put on the Titanic. The Titanic went to the sea, and nature, when the ship sank, said thanks very much, and we'll grow and we'll take this iron out of the steel and we'll make pig iron again. This is another platform. This is one near the front, the bow of the ship. And this was actually the first time. This was This was actually the Russian team. The French team put the thing down in Mortier in 1998. The Russians in 2001-2003 moved it around. 2001, this particular platform, Jim was very unhappy with this platform because it couldn't get a good shot of the stem of the Titanic because the platform was there. So they moved the platform about 100 meters out. And then when we went there in 2003, we pulled it back. There is the very front of the ship right there. That's the very front of Titanic. And notice something about that. Notice that there's very little rusticle growth. That there's some rusticles growing down, but it's like ropes, not touching the steel. So this leads to the theory that appears to be coming supported, that the rusticles are actually electrically changing parts of the ship. Well, okay, when we brought rusticles back, or when we had them on the ship after they'd come up, we'd just do a multimeter and check on the voltages. And there we are. We've got somewhere between 140 and 600 millivolts live. But you had to put the anode down one of the little ducts, and you had to put the cathode right on the surface, then you got it. So it looks like the rusticles are electrical generating systems, and they are in fact cathodically protecting this part of the ship, but not this part. This is the crown of the Titanic, which is the rusticles growing all over the very, very front of the ship. And so we got into a debate of, well, why would they be growing there? Well, you've got the ocean currents coming past. And initially, it looks like it came from the front to the, from the forward to the aft on the stem section. Now, when you come right up to the top, this is where Jack and Rose were sitting. There's this Gorgon, or Gorgonid, that Charlie Pellegrino went very excited about, because this, he claims, is an animal. This is 2003 and it had budded. When you looked at this in 2000 and thank you, then it was around. This is the starboard anchor. This was when Laurie Johnston dove in 2003. And again, when you look behind the anchor, you see there's very little attachment of resticles to the ship. So the theory is that the Titanic is in fact just one huge bio battery. That some parts of the ship are protected and they're ripping out other parts of the ship. So what we're seeing with this is the fact that we've got a preferential deterioration of the ship. And oh yeah, the deterioration. Jim, well, Roy, could you do an animation of the whole collapse of the ship? Oh, right. So I did four drawings a few years ago. Now you're saying to do the whole animation? Well, that's taking a little bit. This is right at the stem, the bow, and it's just looking at a different angle. And when you look up in here, you'll see the guardrail, and that's where Jack and Rose were standing in the film. But when you look at the tonnage of rusticle, and we're looking really at about, just for the bow section, I estimated about 600 tons from the time that we did it then. And there's a constant growth. So what we're getting is, in fact, more and more and more organisms. There's Charlie's little Gorgon up there, because that actually is going to make the cover of his new book. Pardon me for the utterance in the background. I should really turn the sound off, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, so we're going up, and then we come to the railing. This railing is collapsing. And in some places where it's collapsing, there's an unusual phenomenon. The steel disappears, and we're left looking at coal. we're looking at very porous carbon. And it looks initially like wood, but when you get closer to it, it's carbon. That is the picture of the Gorgon, and that's 1998 before it budded. So, you know, sometime we need to look at that. Now I'd like to just look at the mast, which is one of the prime features of the Titanic. The mast at the front, going straight up. When she's sinking, the mast moved backwards and left and went against the bridge deck. So this is actually the railings, and then this is the first hold. And this would be 2001, and then subsequently, going down into that first hold, there are some of the automobiles that were on the car, down in the hold, and those have actually been seen. If you put a robot down there, the robot floats along, takes a picture, and Jim Cameron has got the pictures of that, but he hasn't released it yet. So that's the first hold. And then we come across here. This area here is where the mast is. So the base of the mast is here, and it was pivoted like that. And what has happened is it has collapsed in this region to lie back. So what we are seeing, as you move towards the mast is here, then you see that the mast is no longer vertical, it's leaning over, and it has a very heavy rustical infestation. There's a picture of the rustling infestation. The riveted seams have broken open between 1998 and 2003. So the rivets have collapsed, which means it's only a question of time, and I, for my want of better wisdom, suggested the mast would actually collapse by 2012. The 100th anniversary, which you may know about or not know about, but there is going to be three liners over the ship at the inauguration, mainly dealing with the historical context. So the mast itself, that up there is the crow's nest. It's in a state of collapse. This was a cable that was actually on the ship when she sank. The crow's nest was around this bolted area, and you're not supposed to say this. Well, I'm not supposed to say it, but what the heck? During the 1986-1987 expeditions, they were dragging a drone across the Titanic in order to take the photographs, and Bob Ballard's team did a beautiful job. But accidents happen. And the drone actually went across and hit the crow's nest. This is the top of the mast, which is now in a state of what I call pathetic collapse, and it's only a matter of 2 or 3 years before it goes completely. And then when you look at other sites, you see the decking is going. So it's no longer the iconic specimen that it used to be, and what we're seeing is that gradually, the ship is going to move to just becoming the hull with the two engines in it and then the row of generators. So this is actually below the bridge. We're actually going to climb. There's two decks up to the bridge. So we're moving up the two decks, and you'll see there's a lot of corrosion, a lot of growth. And when you come up to the top deck, you will see the memorial plaques, because there was a lot of outpouring of sentiment when the ship sank. So you see the postal workers put a sign up there. So did the Queenstown people. And it should come up very soon, but you just see the total mass of rusticles that are growing over here. And then that is the upper deck. So the submarine is moving along. You'll notice the clouds. There's the memorials coming up. The clouds are quite normal. The rusticle produces clouds of yellow colloidal materials, like slimes. They also produce red dust in quite copious amounts. So some of the iron is moving back into the oceanic environment. And one of the, this is the telemotor. This is actually the steering wheel for the whole ship. So we're down to just the telemotor. And then this is the Queenstown memorial to the people who sank on the ship. And then there's a series of memorials. And then you'll see just along here a glass bottle. That one was actually the ashes of somebody who wanted to be put on the Titanic. So, okay, so somebody put the ashes on there. But essentially, this whole region is in a state of collapse. The telemotor is actually coming up out of the deck. So in about the next 5 years, if I was to do an animation of this thing, you'd see the telemotor about 2 to 3 feet, that's almost a meter, above the deck itself. So you move throughout and you see this. So what are these rusticles doing? They're actually giving them a name, because that's something I do, and I'm fingerprinting them, looking for their fatty acids, and the communities have very special signals, and the one the rusticles have their own group. And there's actually five different bacterial communities and one fungal community involved. This is a broken glass, this is now we're at the officer's deck level. And moving along here, you see all these rusticles hanging down. What they'll do is they'll break off, they'll go down to the ocean floor, down to a deck, and when we analyze these, pig iron. This is art, because if you're a true scientist, art is very important to you. And so what we're doing here is we're actually, and this is the third time we put it down on the Titanic, but this is developed color slide film. It's unexposed, so it's black. So the microbes get towards this, and this is just starting to go. And here's the result. You get this dye from the film coming out. So the bacteria have had their meal. We provided them with a dinner plate. But they do something more. See this one again, we've got the dyes, and we found that there's a right time to take a sample to get the maximum amount of art out of this thing. And there's the maximum amount of art. This is just one. We've got about 800 of these things. Well, they've got to do something with this. What we've got simply here is that it just runs itself. So you just use your imagination. I don't want to tell you what you see. You'll see what you want to. And I see a spine in that one. And so what we've got is essentially a crude form of stained glass. And we've had exhibitions. If you go to the Science Center today, you go through the Titanic exhibition. When you come out, you come to the real exhibition, which is Droycon, that's mine. And you'll see some of the etchings from 1998 that are on there. Some of these have very interesting things, and one day I should really do an exhibition just of the bacterial art, if I can get them to agree, which I don't think should be too much of a problem. So now we come to 1998, and what does grow on an agar plate? So we put some rusticles on an agar plate, and we got these very peculiar growths, which appear to be dominated by fungi, but then there's some others which are definitely bacterial. And so I looked at these growths, and I thought, there's only so many things I want to tackle. This one I won't tackle. This is actually the fungi that are growing on the outside of the rusticle, because the rusticle has a number of layers. The outermost layer is dominated by these little fungi, and it becomes very tight and very hard. And then inside, there's the crystal structures. Oh, well, okay. So I had an opportunity, well, I went to a Weatherford Laboratories to discuss oil well rehabilitation, etc., because the microbes are really active in oil and gas wells. And so they had a CAT scan. So, you know, what would it cost to get, say, a four rusticles CAT scan? So they told me, okay. So we sent the rusticles along very carefully in the cooler, packed them carefully, and I told them they wouldn't be harmed in any way. And that's the side scan section of the rusticle. You can see big gaps, big holes. I haven't yet got the high resolution images, but they will be coming. And if it's like the other X-ray work we've done, we're going to see that the rusticle is in fact a very complex beast. This is just a close-up of a lateral shot through the thing. And when we do photomicrography, we see things like this. This is about, obviously about 10 microns across here. There's a radiance of crystals around there. This is a flask. What organisms made this? For what purpose? And obviously, and then there's these, which are like strings of, they're primarily iron oxides, but they've been layered, and they give structure. And then there's this open web format, you can get a lot of water in here. And if you're wondering about the water content of a rusticle, it's very high. This, that's 1996. Roy, could you, I'm on the ship. Could you just draw a transection, cross-section of that rusticle over there? Well, that's a 3-foot rusticle. And that's what it looked like when I dissected it. So it had a center water channel coming through the whole thing. This actually was the deck of the Titanic. This was hanging over the side. And what we've got was a lot of iron layering, which was giving that rusticle its strength. And you'll notice there are little holes in there. Those are the ducts. That's where we could find the electrical power. We go down one of those, go against the regular outside, the soma as we call it, and we find we get the millivolts coming out. So that brings up another whole storyline, which is why are the organisms doing that? Well, look at this one. This is a rusticle growing in an aquarium because in 96 and 98 I got a phone call. Well, Roy, could you grow rusticles? We've only just discovered them, damn things. Hey, you want me to grow them? Yeah, in an aquarium. We've got a science show, Titanic Science, coming up in 2000, and we'd like to have an aquarium with growing rusticles. Okay, so this was some of the experiments, and we didn't actually use this method, but it's fun because we actually injected nutrients into the rusticle. And what we got was the cloud. This part was no oxygen, this part was oxygen. This was the border. So we actually found that we could grow the rusticles, that we could move them around. And this is really growing rusticles very quickly. This is 18 hours of time, and the anode cathode, and the anode, but what did we use? We used 1.4 volts, and we got concretions forming. This was the largest rusticle ever to be recovered from the Titanic in 96. And our marine architects didn't see it had any value. They were going to throw it over the fantail of the ship, along with the others that had already formed. So there was kind of a minor battle on the fantail when we recovered these. And that one was in Munich and in Zurich, and it came back, and we were going to prepare it for the American exhibition when a phone call, we're not sure whether it's a part of the ship or not. If it's a part of the ship, it's bound by legal things, and so really you can't display it because it's a part of the ship. Okay, well, so what we did is we kept it in Regina. And this particular rusticle is on display right now at the Science Centre. And the people in the Premier Exhibitions are very aware of this. And one of the problems now legally, you'll see the rivet holes every 4 inches. So those are some of the rivet holes from the ship. You'll see that's about 92% iron. And of that 92% iron, 99% of it came from the Titanic. So if you're talking about iron from the ship, yep, you've got it there. So we've got this sort of legal problem, but there's a legal value in that the West Virginia court gave me right as the only person on the planet that would be allowed to take the rusticles for scientific purposes. So I still am the only person in the world, also the only one able to put experiments on the ship. Ah, it doesn't matter. But the rusticles are beautiful creatures. And this one I just put in because this is 1913 in Regina. This is a mild steel pipeline with freshwater rusticles. We recovered this 3 years ago, and they sent it from NRC, and then when we fingerprinted the rusticles, yes, it was typical. This is the new platform. We've got these on 5 wooden shipwrecks in the Gulf of Mexico. We have planned to put 3 of them on the Titanic, but Hugo and Igor made that practical. But we did call it the Gucci, and that's a general underwater corrosion coupon instrument, which is a good scientific name for it. Right, okay. So no one's argued with that, but we've got them on 5 wooden, and not worn, wooden shipwrecks. Apologies for the error. And then when we look at some of the coupons, this is the Britannic coming. We've got a Gucci actually on the Britannic right now. When the old one came back, there was perforation of the steel in 6 years. The Britannic appears to be going at about 4 times the speed of Titanic, but it's shallow. It's only in 400 feet, that's 120 meters of water. This is a smoker. I put this in, Jim Cameron was out of the smoker, and just over here the temperature of the water is 300 degrees C. And yet you've got so much life. You'll see the crabs fighting with the shrimp for space. And what they're doing is they're feeding on the bacteria that are growing on the smoker. So it's a real hotbed of life. And yet one of the MERS submarines actually went over a smoker and really damaged. Well, that completes the presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions. Just acknowledging numerous people, and including the RMS Titanic, who have been the mainstays in this. Oh, if you're wondering about where the money comes from all this, it doesn't come from the Titanic Association. It comes from the fact that they give us a little bit of money, and then we make it up with profits from my company, Droycom. So thanks, Droycom, for all you do. This is one of the nice etchings. I like it in Nature's Womb Waiting to Be Born. And that's from 98. So we've got lots of these images. One day I'll do something about them. We're just finishing with this. This is Droycom, this is my company. And at the top it says, if we can test for bacteria here on the Titanic, we can test almost anywhere. And in actual fact, we have tested almost anywhere. We've been up in the Andes, and not personally, but the Chilean people have been up in the Andes with our barks, and it's worked well there. We've been down in totally saline materials. We've been in gas wells, and essentially the organisms are everywhere. Anyway, thank you very much for the listening to my talk. Happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? We've got time for questions and answers, so Anybody have any thoughts?
I have one right off the bat, Roy. You mentioned the regulations and how quick it is to get down to the site. But during your presentation, you said someone put these ashes on the Titanic.
Yes.
Now, we don't know who someone is.
Oh, well, I could find out, but I thought that was a bit of a gross thing. But you see, there was a period of time after the fall of the Iron Curtain when the two Russian submarines were basically up for grabs. If you've got the money, they would do it, and there were people who got married at the Titanic site. So somebody willed that their ashes be put on the Titanic, so.
Is it not a protected area still now?
It's international waters. Yeah. And the West Virginia Corp is in charge of the maritime law. And they're trying to resolve all of those issues. And the Corp sort of tried to limit things by saying, well, okay, only Culbore can go and take rusticles from the ship. I could only put experiments on the ship. So that was a validation for me. But all of those plaques went down there without permission, essentially. They were there, most of them, for what I would say were very valid emotional reasons. The ashes, when I first saw it down there, I thought, well, and in fact, what I was suggesting to Noah was that all of the memorials be moved on to what would be a black ABS outline of the ship and put on there, just so that when the ship collapses, the memorials are not lost. But that would involve asking everybody who had the memorials whether they would mind it being moved. And the cost is enormous. It's around $1 million, $1.2 million a day just to be at the site. So it's not something that I would do with pocket change.
Got a question. How many more expeditions do you think are possible before the ship finally just collapses?
Well, I'll take that in two parts. The collapse of the ship is probably within, it depends, that nobody does a weather forecast on the Titanic. And major changes have occurred. For example, originally the water flow was from the bow to the stern, but now it's switched around. So what was the environmental changes that caused that to happen? So we don't really know enough to be able to give many valid answers. It's we're right on the edge of total ignorance here. And what I think the whole of deep ocean, when you look at that last slide and the shrimps, they would be toast if they just moved 20 centimeters across because they'd be over a bend. So there's very limited, but the ship itself, between 30 and 200 years will be just down to the hull. And you know, historians say, well, with that reciprocating engine, will that fall down flat onto the ocean floor or will it keel forward? Well, when you look at the keel under the reciprocating engines, what you've got is red lead paint, toxic paint around the outside. Rusticles having a feast on the middle. So I would suggest that the engine would drop straight down. But until it's validated, who knows? But it should just drop straight down. Under about a quarter of the wrecks, the engines do go straight down. And the rest, it flops over. The hull itself is thicker and so will last longer. But the eventual end of this, well, it won't be the end, but at around 800 years, it'll be just the steam generators and the engines. They'll be around, assuming that there's no sedimentation and fill-in, they'll be around for about 3,000 to 5,000 years. But gradually the corrosion will get in there and take all, even the thickest steel will eventually roll, and it will erode. If you want to look at thick steel, Bismarck had 15, 16 inches of steel plate around. And so when you look at the collapse of Bismarck, you can expect to see that ring of steel as being one of the last markers, but that's in 1,000 years' time.
Do you think that global warming and increasing acidification of the ocean will have an effect on the remains of the Titanic?
Functionally, we don't understand enough about the problem that we have is we live in this aura of ignorance. And my attitude towards global warming is, let's not talk global warming. We can talk carbon dioxide going up. And if you want to look scientifically at it, it relates very directly to the destruction of the rainforest. Nobody ever talks about that. But a rainforest is basically sitting there taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, and it's going down into the tree, into the ground. And when you look at the fertility in a rainforest, it's way above grade. It's way above grade, way above the soil. It's right there in the plant itself. So I think we've got to sit back and look at the carbon thing, and really, I don't think the carbon dioxide is a serious issue. I think what is a serious issue is the rainforest degradation, which of course is being economically driven by countries that have a lot of rainforest and make a lot of money out of knocking those rainforests down. And when you look at since 1850, you look at that degeneration in the rainforest as a percentage of the total, and it's linear. RS was a case on that. So far as gases, the gas that really worries me is not carbon dioxide. It's something called oxygen. And I had a girl, she's actually doing a PhD now. She had to do a reading class. Okay, Christina, the reading class I want you to do is on an important gas. Oh, not carbon dioxide, there's too much about that, I don't want to do that. Okay. I said an important gas. Do I have to give you a hint? I think that's an important gas. If we lost that gas in our atmosphere, how would we survive? We basically wouldn't. And so what Christina did was I gave her 3 weeks to prove me wrong. She couldn't find any, she found 18 peripheral papers, nothing really central and key to the origin of oxygen on this planet. And so, okay, Christine, you're going to do it on oxygen. Now, she did it, and basically the end product, to keep the thing short, is it's not photosynthesis that generates the oxygen, it is bioelectrolysis. And when you look, and that's what Christina's doing most of the work on, is the electrical generation in soils and so on. And it's very common for her to come up with between 300 and 700, 800 millivolts, basically microwatts. But hell, there's a lot of land out there. So there's a lot of energy. So if I was to say an important gas, it wouldn't be the carbon dioxide, it would be the oxygen. And then the funny thing is we try and publish it. Oh, okay, so we go to this prestigious journal. Oh, on oxygen. So they passed it around. They had no one that could review it. What a condemnation for science. That's the gas we breathe. That's the most important gas on this planet. You hear nothing about it. We just go on this whole thing, oh, well, it's from plants. Oh, yeah, well, if you live in Saskatchewan, you've got basically frozen ground and frozen air, and how are you going to get any oxygen here during the winter? Oh, well, it's the oxygen diffuses very rapidly. Well, okay, you can say that. But my concern is we're being focused, artificially focused. And something I'll do with school kids, and this is fun. Hey, you really like dinosaurs? Yeah, they're great. Why do you like them?
Well, they're big.
Oh, okay. So you like big living things. Okay. Well, I can show you a big living thing right out of this window right now. And it's a lot bigger than a dinosaur.
Yeah,
I go to the window, and there's the blue sky, there are the clouds. The clouds are alive. Not with the sound of music, but the clouds are alive. And when we've looked at the clouds, and we have, obviously, I haven't talked about my company, but we have some very fine analytical techniques. And we found the cloud, when it's raining, is between 10 and 30 million bacteria per mil. That's a hell of a lot. And when you next look at a cloud, don't look at it as a cloud, look at it as nature's band-aid, because that band-aid is taking all the chemicals, is degrading them, breaking them down, and it's a part of the nature's cycle. And something I found traditionally is that nature's cycles are always simple. They have to be to function continuously. So I went off a little bit on your carbon dioxide thing, but I do feel, I mean, we've got one of our experimental testers, which we sell around the world, but that stupid thing, it will, 70% of the time, we'll get this carbonate in the test, which means the carbon dioxide has been converted to carbonate. I don't even really want to look at that, but it's 70%. So that means there's tremendous ability in the microbial community to move carbon dioxide to a carbonate. You never hear anyone talking about that. So it's a peculiar thing, because if you're going to be a scientist on the edge, you're automatically going to be flouting against the mainstream, because the mainstream is grant oriented. Oh, let's make money doing this, let's make money doing that. I don't follow that. You do it because there's a need for that to be found out. And so one of my things today is actually looking at the carbon cycle, and from the point of view of all the oil, all the gas, and yes, all of the coal is a biological product, and that it recycles. And when you're really in a reductive zone, then it ends up as a petroleum hydrocarbon, or it ends up as primary methane, or it ends up as coal. And it doesn't matter where that occurs on the planet, it just has to be reductive. Well, if you look at that, well, that asteroid that's just passing the Earth right now, what did they say about the chemistry? Oh, well, it looks like silicon and carbon, and but it does look like coal. Yeah, well, carbon and silicon are two primary forms of life, so it's not surprising to see both of them there. The coal, not surprising, the asteroid would be presumably very reductive. And if it's very reductive, the organics will go down to carbon, coal, black. So, there's a lot of romancing to be done in science. But unfortunately, not too many people really want to do it. Anyway, the Titanic gave me a unique opportunity to do it.
Any other questions?
Does pressure really affect microbes?
Oh, I should have put that in there.
Yeah. It would change that.
Like, you're going to 6,000 psi. Yeah. And so that was something that particularly documentary people wanted to get onto, and nowhere in 2003 wanted to get onto. So we started in 1998, 2001, 2003. And we took squalid little surface-dwelling microbes that are well known as pure cultures. Staphylococcus was one of them. E. coli was another. We strapped them into a little vessel, which was sterile, that was contained within filters so they couldn't get out. But it went down on a compressor to the ship. And so it had the salt, it had the temperature, it had the pressures. We brought them back and in 2003, we got 100% recovery. So the bacteria have a much better ability to survive under those pressures. So, you know, what are you going to do with that? Well, okay, this is interesting information. Sometimes someone should really look at that, but it wasn't a major factor. Always said to me was microbes can exist under those pressures. And if you look at the smokers, where you've got not only you've got that, you've got this huge temperature differential. Once you've got cold water coming in, the bugs are there. And then the shrimp and then the crabs. So you get the full life cycle. But the pressure's not so important. And when you look at the crabs and shrimp, they don't mind that, but they adapt to that. I have to say, you know, we've got a landfill by Regina. Did you ever think about the sea fill? Where's the landfill in the oceans? Well, there is a landfill, or a sea fill, if you like, where everything goes down and degrades. And it's from 400 meters to 1,000 meters. And, you know, Jim Cramer, I said, you got to do a whole documentary on this. This is the most beautiful thing, because when you go down in a submarine, you get down and you finally persuade the captain to turn the stupid lights off. What the hell are you looking at? But once you turn the lights off, then you see the bioluminescence. And what the bugs are doing is they're flashing a blue light to stay away from me. And you are actually floating for about 600 meters through this suburbia of light. And you can almost swear, oh, there's Woodwell Park, there's Albert Park. No, come on. But you've got all this. And what it's really doing is, let's say a whale dies, it will sink and it will get down to those depths, and then the microbes will start to degrade and make the gas and keep it buoyant. So this 1,000 meters to 400 meters is where the microbes maintain the organic so they can degrade it. And another minor thing which the French really got on to me about in 96, quite rightly, was why is there 4 parts per million of oxygen at the submarine? I mean, this is way below anything where you could get plant life. And the oxygen to come down there is going to be very difficult. My answer today is, well, that's bioelectrolysis. That's quite normal. And all microbes make electricity. And that's one of the new sayings, new areas of science, which has to be developed. And that's why Christina is working on bioelectrolysis. And let's see, she's got 3 papers published, which means some places she could just walk away with a PhD without. But no, not here. But it's an interesting phenomenon. And what the hell's wrong with that? Because we make electricity. How could we exist without making electricity? So when we evolved the system for making electricity in our bodies, where did that come from? Well, it started with microbes. And then we refined it, so to speak. Sorry for the long answer.
Anyone else? Well, I'll just mention a couple of things. There are refreshments outside the room here in the hallway. The library does have a exhibit about the Titanic. And also, please, if you can, visit the Titanic exhibit at the Science Center and the DROICON Titanic exhibit.
Now, please go to the DROICON. Lots of notes to give to the Science Center to pass on to premier exhibitions that run the exhibition, because I'm one of the promoters of relaunching the Titanic, bringing down the artifacts to only a third of the exhibition, but then making the sides about a third, and I would like to see the art as a third. Because when you get there, you look at the art. Well, you'll see some art when you go into the Titanic, but it's nothing like the range we have. And what I like about that is makes you exercise your imagination. And the microbes are trying to get us to do that. Oh, okay. Thanks.
Thank you again for attending, everybody in the room and online, and thank you, Dr. Kullman.
Oh, you're welcome.